Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It is the Coach Home, Neil Atkinson, John Gibbons, Mo Stewart. And what are we talking about, John?
What are we? Well, the Premier League. That Premier League. Well, the fact that Chelsea are going to win the league. The fact that Mourinho enjoys winning trophies more with Chelsea. It's all a bit Chelsea for me.
Do you think he enjoys it more with Chelsea?
I messaged that to Rebecca yesterday. She's not got back to me yet, so I don't know what her opinion on it. But, you know, when it's sort of more miserable on the side for Man United, I'm sure he used to enjoy the cups more with Chelsea.
Yeah, I think he was quite stressed out. Rebecca, do you think he enjoyed it more with Chelsea?
I would like to consider Jose an intelligent man. And I despite the fact that he's worked for Roman Abramovich twice and didn't think he was getting sacked twice. But I think he was kind of like, yes, this is a trophy, this is a good trophy. I know he said, obviously, he's very emotional and blah, blah, blah. I would also be emotional if that was going to be the height of my season. And I feel like that might have been his thoughts, you know, kind of, oh, God, now we've got to fight for the Europa League and I've got to pretend to be happy about that as well. And I'm probably going to get knocked out in the FA Cup by my former club. But I think he for sure counts it as a trophy, as Man United fans seem to, which is, it is odd because I do remember winning it a couple of times and being told by Man United fans that it was a tin pot trophy. And I seem to remember them telling Man City and Liverpool that last year.
They're not all the same. Now, they're not all the same, the United supporters. They can have different views, Rebecca. They're allowed to enjoy it. Come on.
You know, it's funny because I didn't realise that ESL Cup is better than the World Cup, but it must be the new name. But yeah, I think Jose was happy for sure. He didn't look happy. He literally looked like he was about to cry. Maybe that was because he was just stood there thinking, how on earth am I going to explain Paul Pogba's performance? And that was before the dab with the trophy. But I think for sure, he didn't look happy, which is very strange considering, you know, you have just won a piece of silverware. I thought he looked happier when he won the Charity Shield or the Community Shield or whatever we call it these days at the start of the season. Maybe he is just worried about a fixture pile up at the end of the day.
He's got wider things on his mind.
Mm-hmm. He has, but we've got you on to talk about Chelsea, although you love talking about Mourinho.
He's an interesting guy.
He is an interesting guy. There is, moving then towards Chelsea, it was a minor glint of hope for about 20 minutes for the rest of us on Saturday when it looked like you might drop points against Swansea, and then you just eased to 3-1. It's a side that's looking more and more like a procession.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest now, I literally, maybe I'm jinxing it, and I think if it was like a Spurs or an Arsenal at the top of the table and their fans were like, well, yeah, we are basically champions, I would now use the word champions-elect, to be quite honest. If that was a Spurs or an Arsenal, I'd be like, oh, you are going to regret those T-shirts. But with us, I'm like, nah, no. We literally just do look like that there is not going to be a game in the league where it's going to go disastrously wrong on a long enough run for us to, you know, lose all these points. It is surprising to me from the start of the season how this has happened. I've made, you know, it clear on many occasions how I've kind of, especially earlier on in the season, how I was a little bit dubious and I didn't think the players were good enough. I still stand by that for the abuse that I would get, and I understand why people would say, you know, get back in your box and close the lid and wait for removal day, because I pseudo think when we get back into Europe, which we almost inevitably are now, I think certain players will be exposed. But for the Premier League, you know, this season they are kind of more than good enough. But I think had Chelsea not put together this kind of unassailable lead, and that's almost certainly what it's looking like at the moment, I think it would again have been a bit of last season, because there is a fight for the top six, and even I've kind of described it as the best fight between, you know, the top sort of clubs in years. But then they're not very good. Points are being dropped left, right and centre, you know. So I think it is one of those things where you look at the overall league and you think Chelsea are runaway leaders, but I would think that is also because of some rather serious failings on other people's points. But then as well, you know, you look at the squad, and if you compare that to Man United with their tin-pot game against Pogba's brother, you kind of think Jose started, because I understand why he took that game so seriously and, you know, didn't want San Etienne to get one goal, which turns into two, which turns into you lost 4-3. But he still started with Mkhitaryan and Michael Carrick and Zlatan. And I don't like using Pogba as a first teamer because, you know, he's been up to rubbish at times. But, you know, those players. And you think, if your squad was stronger, that shouldn't have been what you have to do, considering all you ever do these days is moan about fixture pile-up. If you look at Chelsea, if Chelsea were in that position, I seriously doubt that would have happened, because people like Fabregas could have come in, Willian could have come in, Zuma could have come in. So I think part of it is Chelsea's backup options are better than the rest of the league. But you just, all you have to do is look at Fabregas's little cameos. Obviously, this weekend was different, but his little cameos usually in the last 20 minutes when it's been a 1-1 or a 0-0 or Chelsea have just had the 1-0. And he's come on, assisted or scored, and, you know, it essentially changed what could have been 1 point into three. So I think Chelsea's backup options have been a lot to do with why they are where they are. Fabregas in particular, it kills me to see Cesc on the bench, because I just really feel like there must be a way we can accommodate him. But then I suppose having a substitute like that is the point as well.
Yeah, it allows, I mean, you say about the backup options, but Chelsea have without Europe, it's allowed them to have a strong 14 or 15, hasn't it, really, rather than kind of worrying about a 22 like it maybe has been in the past. And it'd be interesting to see, you know, if they had to make wholesale changes, you know, how those backup options would look. I mean, having options like the bench, like Fabregas and Willian, as you say, is very enviable for any other teams. But, you know, when Liverpool had that pile-up in January, they were having to use much more and going into, you know, really sort of 9-10 changes rather than 3-4. And it'd be interesting to see how Chelsea coped having to do that, perhaps, but
terribly. Like I've said it a few times, like the overall full squad, it is nowhere near good enough to fight on, I don't even think, two fronts, to be honest, but on the Premier League front almost certainly. But again, not having Europe, it has been obviously for me really depressing, actually, because I would rather be talking about a fixture pile up.
Yeah.
Maybe not in the Europa, but in general I would rather be in something than not in it. But Chelsea also went out of the League Cup very, very early. So, you know, while Liverpool and Man United were faffing about with their 55 semi-finals because you can't just have one game, you know, Chelsea again didn't have that issue.
Sorry Mo, just quickly, before the game they were trying to look into ways that the Chelsea might not win because we have to try and keep it interesting, and they were talking about the fact that Chelsea have conceded quite a number of headed goals this season, and maybe that's kind of one kind of weakness at the back, and that's one area where they're missing John Terry a little bit. And I hadn't noticed it at all. I don't think it was a great deal in, you know, I think it was about 7 or 8 headed goals they conceded in the Premier League this season, but they were looking for something. And then, lo and behold, they conceded a headed goal that was maybe a little bit too easy. You know, it's very deep free kick, and the ball's in the air for a long time. And he's a great header of the ball, Llorente. But you know, is that a potential weakness? Do you look at that something to say that you might worry you between now and the end of the season, or is that everyone kind of clutching at straws and thinking maybe there's one thing this Chelsea team can't do that we can all maybe try and get at?
I don't even think that's clutching at straws. I think that's trying to clutch at melted butter. That's not even a thing. If you look at the amount of goals Chelsea conceded as a whole since they swapped to 3 at the back, 7, that is probably a huge ratio of them. But yeah, Chelsea don't concede goals. If you are in football going to concede goals at some time, at some point, for whatever reason, it is just, you know, not everybody can go through the season with clean sheet after clean sheet. And I think these like conceded headed goals, well, it's not ideal, no. And if people want to call it a weak spot, you know, go for it. But I think that isn't to me a huge issue. What to me would be an issue, especially going forward into next season, and it would have been an issue if everybody played like Spurs or everybody played like Liverpool, is the fact that obviously Conte's made a huge difference, because, you know, we've seen what he's done for Wesley Morgan and Robert Huth in terms of players with pace running at them and stuff. But I've highlighted it a few times. I think if there's a really high-intensity pressing side and a pressing side who have tricky wingers and wing-backs or full-backs like Spurs do, who will run at you, we are going to have problems, because if you run at Gary Cahill, you will get past him. Yeah. And if you run at Marcus Alonso, you probably are going to get past him. For now, it isn't an issue, because it still surprises me that people hadn't seen, or they did see the Spurs game and tried to put it into practice when their teams play Chelsea. But obviously, it is so hard to execute that for 90-odd minutes. You see it so often, don't you, in the Premier League? It might be 0-0 till minute, like, 63, or a team like Chelsea or Arsenal or Man United, they get their goal later on, because the other team who have worked so hard get so tired, and they just can't keep doing it. So, I think once you, again, get into Europe, that is very different.
So thinking on to next season, if we're not going to try and clutch a butter anymore and just concede the league, how do you think Conte is going to plan to get around the pitfalls that have befall you last time and Leicester last time as well, whereby the intensity that's needed to win the league seems to burn out into the next season?
I mean, it's, you know, who knows what players are going to wake up and think. I have no idea. Eden Hazard might wake up and think, yeah, it was really fun to be a rebel. Let's go full Star Wars and do it again. Like, I'll get rid of one jacket. But I think if you look at the mistakes that those teams made, and I know we did it very, very prominently, Leicester have also done it, there was no, like, new blood to the extent. Obviously, you know, some players came in and blah, 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 and some players left, but there was no new blood to the extent that you thought people like Costa or people like Hazard or people like, you know, a Jamie Vardy or a Mahrez are going to really be fighting for their place. Leicester kind of obviously struggled because they're Leicester and they sold their absolute best player by country mile as well. Obviously, it shouldn't have been to this extent, and yet again, the players are a disgrace. You know, it genuinely, I literally shed a tear for Ranieri, not because of Ranieri, because I remember that this is the man that played Robert Huth up front against Monaco in a semi-final where we should have won. So, you know, he's a great man, but I don't really love him like other people do. But I was so upset because, yet again, it's this culture of player power winning. And I think the Leicester players, like Man City players under Mancini, decided that they were big-time Charlies. And you have to remember, for those Chelsea players, for a lot of them as well, obviously not be John Terry, etc., but for some of them, it was their first big trophy in England, and Eden Hazard was lauded as better than Cristiano Ronaldo, which, you know, makes as much sense as saying Pogba's worth $89 million. It's absolute rubbish. But I think they then lost themselves. But recruitment. Mm-hmm. And I'm not people like Emiliano's biggest fan. You know, I don't think that the Chelsea board are sometimes as good as they probably should be, especially in terms of sell on and, you know, buyback clauses and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they have to bring in this summer. I'm sure Conte will make them. Conte is a very scary man. You know, whereas Mourinho kind of smiles and thinks, yeah, but he's probably a nice guy underneath it. You know, you look at Conte and think, God, he'd kill me dead. So if I was Abramovich, I'd be buying in a striker. There's got to be a striker, almost certainly, that comes in. Somebody has to put pressure on Costa. You know, a lot of the defence went kind of either in the summer or they've gone in January. People like Ivanovic, and you kind of look and you think, well, we almost certainly need backup in this area as well. So I think that is going to be huge for Conte. And also, I think Conte has shown, which did surprise me with the whole Diego Costa disaster, he will swallow his pride for the sake of the team. But again, it's when you see the team under a new manager for the first season, everything's rosy and everything's great. I think it does take a couple of years, you know, for these, unless it's like Real Madrid and Benitez, and you know, the man was never going to win there. If you get it like a Conte and a Chelsea or a Ranieri and Leicester, then it will be a couple of years. You know, I'm reading now Leicester players want to bring back Nigel Pearson. I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, in 2 years, I could fully see Eden Hazard knocking on Abramovich's door going, you know that Mourinho, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad after all.
All right. As ever, Rebecca, fantastic to speak to you. Annoyingly clear at the top. I've just looked at your fixtures and I can't see any problems. I was doing that as you were talking there, having a little look, going, well, maybe Bournemouth could get something. Don't think so. No. Huge thank you to Rebecca. We will shoot along now, and we shall shoot towards Crystal Palace or West Brom. But very free and easy this morning. From Chelsea to West Brom. West Brom indeed. All winners this week, John. All winners.
Completely by accident. I must have just been in a good mood and wanted to speak to optimistic people. They say surround yourself with optimists, don't they? Rather than pessimists.
Is that what they say?
Yeah, that's what you should do in life.
Well, I mean, I can't work out which of those Tony Pulis is. Isn't that like a practice link there, Dan? Segued in. Because as soon as West Brom were in eighth, 7 points clear of the side in ninth, as soon as they get the win, he just starts talking about 40 points. And I'd be a little bit worried now, Dan. I'll be honest. I'd be a little bit worried that a lot of what West Brom have done really, really well, all the hard work, that momentum sort of dissipates in some way, because all the players are thinking, well, the gaffer's told us we're boxed it now.
Mm. Yeah, he's given them all the rest of the season off. Where the kids now. They had the end of season party on Sunday. They've all been given their bonuses. Packed up and gone home. The 40-point mark has won. Tony Pulis has won the 40-point league again.
He's nailed it. He's nailed it. Now he just needs to nail the coming 12th league.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right to say there's kind of two leagues now, isn't there? I mean, we've that gap between us and eighth. I can't. Between us and ninth, I'm not sure who is. Who is it?
Yeah,
is it
West Ham? It's West Ham, and I can't work. Yeah. Which is weird. I mean, West Ham have just come with that run. I can't quite work out whether or not you're top of the bottom league. Or bottom of the top league. Which one do you think you are?
Bottom of the top league.
You're bottom of the top league.
Is that all right?
No, that's fine. That's fine. You can if you can make this decision now, Dan. So the aim should be finishing ahead of Everton then.
Yeah.
That's the aim. And we've got them a week on Saturday. It's their place. And they beat us at the start of the season at home, I believe, 2-1. So that's now quite a big game. And I don't want to obviously offend you guys, but Man United winning yesterday was very good for us, because it does give us that slim hope that the Europa League will fall down to seventh place. I'm not sure what the math is, but it's something ridiculous.
No, there's,
like
no.
if,
there's a fair if chance that'll happen
the
now.
FA Cup finals are both Champions League places, etc. So we now have a genuine chance of getting to Europe. There's no chance by any mathematical situation where we can come eighth, I think, and get into Europe. But there genuinely is a possibility. I think I said to you before on this podcast, it's a shame that it's actually Everton we're chasing. Because Everton, we've been winning and winning and winning. I think we've won seven out of the last eight at home. But Everton have also been winning and winning and winning. So we're both in great form. We need them to slip up, really. Because they're playing very well at the moment. But that game at Goodison Park, suddenly it's a really, really important game. And we're not used to having important games that involve us chasing the team down above us in the top half of the league. But I bring it back. When I first started in this podcast with you guys, we were talking, weren't we, ludicrously about the idea of Pulis not being the right man. Yeah. And every single week now, it's proven completely ridiculous. I said it was ridiculous. It is ridiculous. Those fans who criticised him should apologise.
You're putting the boot in here, Dan.
Absolutely. There were people who were criticising him, his ability to sign players, the style of football we're playing, and they've been proven wrong on every single count. And at the moment, the way we're playing, I have to say, it's unfortunate that it's Everton we're chasing down, because I think if we're going to get into Europe at all, this is the season we're going to do it, because at the moment, we're kind of unstoppable, especially at home.
All I can think about now is going to this Everton West Brom game, you know. It's going to be massive. Seriously, it's suddenly massive. I'm going to go with my Gareth McCauley mask on.
We're playing Burnley at home the next day.
Oh, right. Oh, that's a good weekend.
It's a good one of weekends. Go on, definitely. Mo.
Sold out, unfortunately.
Your end might have done.
Yeah. I mean, there's one or two restrictive views at Goodison Park. Yeah.
The whole away end being the part of it.
Sorry, Dan. I was just going to say, do you think that having Europe as this most motivation is going to stop the kind of dissipation of the season. Because if I remember rightly, last time you were doing this well under Steve Clarke, you got to 40 points around the same time. I think there was like 11 or 12 games to go in the season, yeah. And you lost half of them, and you got another 9 points before the whole rest of the season. And I'm looking at your fixtures, and yes, you have got that key game against Everton, but half of the games you've got are against the teams above you, and those are the ones who've been beating you so far this season. So it is one of those could-go-either-way situations still.
It is. I think realistically, if I had to put money on it and held the gun to my head, I'd say I don't think we are going to leapfrog Everton. For the reason you just stated, I think look at the fixture list. We've got a remarkable record against the teams below us. We've lost one game all season against the teams below us, and that was Bournemouth away. Right at the start of the season, and that was actually probably the pinnacle of the kind of the peak of the anti-Pulis brigade. They're now disgraced and discredited anti-Pulis brigade. keep going. And that was the point at which we lost to Northampton in the League Cup, and we then went lost to Bournemouth or one of the two, vice versa. And that was the point at which people were saying, "Oh, it's kind of time over for him." But that's the only game we've lost against teams below us. It's a remarkable record. The record against the teams above us is appalling. And my theory for this really is this. In previous seasons, when we've played much more defensive, much more tight, kind of two banks of four, not tried to kind of score as many goals, we've actually struggled to beat the teams below us because they play similar football. Whereas when we played the Arsenals and the Evertons and the Liverpools and the Man United, they've struggled to break us down. And we've managed to pick up points. I mean, I've been to Anfield twice and watched us win at Anfield playing that kind of football. And same at Man United and same at Arsenal. But because we are now playing more expansive football, teams like you guys love playing against teams that come out and play against you because you can just pick us off and score goals. So part of the payoff of playing the way we're playing is we are beating more teams like Bournemouth and Palace and Hull or easily. But the flip side of that is we are struggling to beat those teams above us. And I think as a manager, Pulis deserves credit for that. I think it's hard to him to say we're going to play a certain type of way against this team and a certain type of way against that team. Actually, his philosophy this season has actually been to play the same way against virtually every team. It hasn't meant that we struggle against teams above us.
That's been interesting. That it's moved away from a lot of sort of classic Pulis tropes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
all the stuff that you've seen in the past. Because I think it's the regular three that are playing. And by that, what I mean is, you know, it's looked. No matter, he's brought Livermore in now, and Livermore's hit the ground running and done really well. But it's looked very 4-2-3-1 all the way through the season. And it's more that he's been playing 4-5-1 or 4-4-2. All the midfield have had the responsibility to defend, whereas it is that three, isn't it? Whoever it's been through the season, Brunt, Morrison and Chadley at the weekend, they have had a lot more licence than Pulis' sides in the past to actually play as attacking midfielders rather than just as lads who are expected to graft like Matty Etherington.
Absolutely. I think he's... And there's an open to debate as to why exactly that's happened. Some fans will say it's because of pressure, and that's probably nonsense. I think it's probably more to do with the fact that he's now got the personnel to do it. I mean, it was, as you said, those three on Saturday, but it has been Matty Phillips as well. And so Phillips and Chadley and Morrison have been the three more often than not recently. I mean, to think that Pulis would play those three very out-and-out attacking players in the same team. Tony Pulis is kind of unheard of. But I think if you look at Stoke and you look at Palace, when he's had the players, they have played more like that. I mean, if you look at his record at Palace, again, people often forget his time at Palace, but he took over and they were bottom of the league and ended up coming, I think, 14th or maybe 11th. I can't remember what it was. Something ridiculous. And because they were bottom of the league and cut adrift, he had to play attacking football. And he let the likes of Zaha kind of run free, and they played very attacking football. By definition, they had to play attacking football because they had to win games. So he has got it in him. He has played this kind of football in the past. He's well known, kind of infamously, for playing this kind of negative football, which I think is unfair. I've been subtly hinting the fact I'm quite like Tony Pulis, but I think he has got it in him. It's just up until this season, he hasn't had the players to do that at West Brom, and he's had to wait and be patient and pick the players. And I think a manager who has one set philosophy, who's never going to change it, someone like Tony Mowbray or someone like Brendan Rodgers, someone like Louis van Gaal, you don't get anywhere, I think, in the modern game of playing this kind of, this is how we're playing, regardless of who I've got, I'll try and make these players fit into this philosophy. It's just ridiculous. You've got to look at your squad and think, well, this set of players are going to play like this, and that's how we're going to get to 40 points, or this is how we're going to get in the top four. And again, it's about adapting, and that's what he's done. I think it's come from he's got the right players now, and that's how he can play.
I think those who don't adapt end up getting found out anyway, really.
Absolutely, I totally agree.
I think one of the interesting things for me with looking at West Brom, and particularly this change in terms of the freedom given to the front three, I think a lot of it's come down to the fullbacks as well, because in the previous sides, you'd have basically four centre-halves at the back, which meant that if you didn't have the freedom from the attackers, then there was going to be no threat on the wings. Whereas now you've got someone like Neom, who is a traditional fullback who can do the defensive and the going forward and the back stuff. And Dawson as well is actually quite underrated when it comes to going forward, especially, well, not just his goal scoring as he did at the weekend, but some of the balls he's putting across. And I think he's just given he's just trusted his defenders more to be able to do both jobs, so he's not having to rely on the people up front to double up.
I think you're right. I think especially Neom, I think Neom is the key in that. And who would have thought, yeah, £2 million signing from Watford on the last day of the transfer window, a player no one really heard much of, has been the key, actually. It's a good observation, I think, because it's meant that we have been able then to kind of have a lot more confidence going forward, because the wingers don't have to double up with the fullbacks. I went to Southampton last season and we lost 3-0. It was a terrible performance. And at one point, I think we counted that he had sort of eight at the back, and he had his three centre-halves, his two fullbacks, and then his two wingers playing as sort of second fullbacks on either side, because he clearly just didn't trust his fullbacks. And so we had to kind of bring the wingers back. So, yeah, I think that's right. I think Alan Neom's in the key there. Dawson, I mean, I think watch out for Dawson as the next centre-half. I mean, he is McCauley's replacement. I think when Evans was injured, Dawson was brought into the middle for two or three games and was absolutely superb. Alongside McCauley, and I think if you, as a West Brom fan now, I think we are now looking for a kind of permanent traditional right back. I think Dawson's done a lot better than some fans give him credit for, and he does chip in with the odd goal. He's a decent crosser of the ball, but he's made his intentions clear that he wants to play centre half. He's a very, very talented guy. He's young. And I think McCauley, even though he continues to roll back the years with, I don't know, he's scored more goals than half the Premier League strikers or something ridiculous.
His goals to games ratio is mental. In international football as well. He's in international football as well.
Yeah, it is. And I don't want to. Gareth McCauley's a kind of living legend at West Brom, but there have been signs in the last sort of 10 games of his kind of ability is starting to wane a little bit at this level.
He's just a poacher now.
He's just a goal scorer now. He's got to send him up the corner.
His link up play is not what it was.
Yeah, he's the roar of the laugh of our team. He just goes up the corners, but we have to look after him. With McCauley, I think there's been signs against Chelsea, against Arsenal, against Middlesbrough, where he's made a couple of errors and looked a little bit a yard off the pace. He's probably got maybe one season as a squad player left in him, but Dawson, I think, will move across. So the challenge is for West Brom to buy a fullback, which, for some reason, under various managers, we are incapable of signing a fullback.
There's none of them out there anymore, to be honest with you. People are always on about Liverpool needing a left back, and there aren't any.
The game has changed, hasn't it? The traditional sort of right back, left back. I mean, people like me, who sort of now sort of late 20s, 3 stone heavier than they want to be, used to play centre midfield, and now they're too fat to play right back.
Get off mine and John's back, are you done?
That needs to come back. People like me need to start put the hand and say, look, steady right back, slightly overweight, but I'll try my best.
Hey, I started my career at left back, so I had no chance of success.
I dream of someone looking at my body shape and telling me to go right back. Anyway, Dan, we'll. I mean, you know, you mentioned that before. We'll get you back on before that Everton game, but it's worth pointing out. I'm going to speak to a Palace supporter in a minute that, you know, that Everton game can become even more of a significant one, obviously, if you get the 3 points at home against Palace. And, we'll speak to you before the Everton game, but that really would sort of keep the pressure up on Everton, and it'd be 43 points, and also it'd be something for all the lads in the dressing room to go, no, the season isn't finished here. We can keep winning games, this home game against Palace.
Yeah, I think it's the next big challenge, I think, for Pulis and the team is to, and as you mentioned, the Steve Clarke era, we did this last season. We got to 40 points with about 6 games to go and lost, I think we lost all of them, or almost all of them. So the challenge is to kind of motivate them, to genuinely make them believe that they can get into that top seven, that they can leapfrog Everton. The belief is kind of everything there. But I think they now have players like Johnny Evans and kind of Chadley and those quality players who've kind of played at the top level before that can say, look, this is doable. I think the problem was in Steve Clarke in particular, the squad was kind of full of players that were overachieving. I don't think this squad is that. I think this squad has players that are playing at the level that we expect them to play at, and therefore I think they probably do have a slightly different mindset going into sort of like the last third of the season. But Palace, I mean, the problem with us now is that we're playing, and every team, is that you're playing against teams now who, in many ways, have even more to play for. And you talk about Palace, when you kind of look at the two teams, we've got a kind of nominal chance of becoming seventh, which might mean we get into Europe versus Palace, who are kind of fighting for their lives with a very good manager who knows what he's doing down there. So we're going to start to play those teams that we may have kind of dismissed at the start of the season quite easily in games that are going to come back. People like Hull suddenly playing well. Swansea got the last day of the season and suddenly playing well again. Palace picking up points. So it's a different dynamic, I think, at this stage of the season where teams have got a lot to play for.
Okay, great to speak to Dan, and we will shoot over now to speak to Robbie Scotcher. From Dan Hewitt, West Bromwich Albion, to their opponents next week, Robbie Scotcher talking about Crystal Palace, and the manager's called it the biggest win of the season, and it is, isn't it, Robbie? I mean, you know, yeah, it's the all equal 3 points, but that decline had to be arrested, and it was arrested in many senses in the best way. If Middlesbrough had turned up and been awful and Palace had got a 3-1 or a 3-2 or something, that would have been all right, because any win's a win at this stage. But I think keeping the clean sheet, getting 1-0 up, battling for one another, showing that sort of scrapping and desire, it's what Selhurst Park wanted to see, and it's what the manager wanted to see.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, the chairman came out a couple of days before and sort of made a bit of a speech to everyone saying, look, Selhurst Park got really twitchy. As soon as we go a goal down, it just, you know, you could feel the whole ground get worried, the players get worried, etc. And he put out a speech saying, look, relegation's not the worst thing. Let's just get behind the team and see if we can just do it. And I think that speech itself changed. People went into the ground with a different view. And you kind of, you know, when you walk in a ground, sometimes you go, yeah, we're going to win today. And you could just feel it. And it was to bring Middlesbrough down into that as well. So, you know, because obviously, I think if we'd lost that game, we'd have gone down. Yeah, I know it's a long way to go, but you have to win that game.
I suppose just straight after the Sunderland game, and he talked a lot about that Allardyce, didn't he, saying, you know, he feels like for the fans, you know, they had some making up to do, really. And, you know, I mean, I'm not sure it's quite done that, because it was quite the defeat, but, you know, it's on the right path, and as you say, kind of following that up with the defeat there just might have been kind of, you know, too much for the club to take, really.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what, that 2 week break is, as well, it's so important. Because, I mean, we've been conceding goals just before half-time. If you look at the times when we concede goals, and you can, you know, all the fans are looking up at the clock and you're like, oh, here we go, 40 minutes, what's going to happen? We're definitely going to concede. You know, you kind of write in your own scripts a little bit sometimes. So, yeah, it's just such a huge win. And not only that, that first half was the best performance of the season. We started playing football well, we were gelling. The second half, we were against it a little bit, but we always were going to be like that. They're a good team at Middlesbrough. They don't lose by many goals ever.
Yeah.
It was just a great game for us. And I mean, we should have had a penalty at the end. That again, but for that, that was a bit of a disgrace. But yeah, just needed that 3 points.
Robbie, a lot of people have mentioned that Big Sam has had the new manager bounce, so to speak. But do you think now that the players are starting to see what he's doing? Could you see where his work was starting to bear fruit on the pitch?
Yeah, totally. I mean, just being solid at the back. Also, bearing in mind, we've got two new players at the back.
Mm.
So, and we've been making so many errors. Midfielders making runs they didn't need to make, making passes that you wouldn't normally do, you know, not playing together at the back. And I think that 2 weeks, especially losing, I mean, to be honest with you, maybe it was a good thing to lose 4-0 for Sunderland. Make everyone.
Well, maybe
you really have to hammer home that you're going down.
Maybe better than losing 1-0, say, if you know what I mean. Like maybe it's the idea that, you know, to lose is obviously always bad, and losing is losing. But maybe it was this is as bad as it can get. So now we've all got to work together, lads, or we might as well forget about it. Maybe it was one of those moments.
Oh, absolutely, completely, and he has changed the way we play. I mean, Pardew was talking about maverick players and talking about, you know, mercurial wingers and trying to play with pace, trying to have the ball more, pass it. And, you know, it just didn't work. So then when Allardyce comes in, he has to completely change the way we've been playing all season. And it's just taken a while for it to start to bed in, really.
It's now... Go on.
Go on.
No, you go on, mate. Oh, so we've got come to an impasse. So you mentioned there about sort of dragging Middlesbrough into it, and that's what I sort of wanted to drive at, really, is that you're now in a situation where there's 7 points from 20th to 14th in Sunderland through to Bournemouth. You're now out of it in 17th place, but, you know, 17th place, 1 point. The thing is, that what I'm saying is that there's... It may well suit Palace if everyone, if there can be more and more sides getting involved and making more of these games sort of nip and tuck and all of that sort of stuff. It might well suit Allardyce as well to have a series of cup final mentalities. It might suit the home ground for it to feel that way. If it was just a battle with one other side, it's easy to get demoralised. But next weekend, you know, hypothetically, you know, Liverpool could beat Leicester tonight. Hull could lose next weekend. Swansea could lose next weekend. And then you've got your game against West Brom. Do you know what I mean? What I mean is that if it's only one other side, it gets all toe-to-toe. Whereas it being a group of them means there's always some light at the end of the tunnel for everybody.
Oh, totally. I mean, and you'll start hear people talking about a mini league. So it would be like, we've got to try and win this mini league within this. And and what's interesting with this relegation battle this season is the fact that normally there's one team that's completely adrift. Mm. That's just not the case. All those seven teams, if you look what that manager's done with Hull, I mean, they're a completely different team. Mm-hmm. Swansea look great, compared to what they were. So it's really competitive down there. And, yeah, the more teams that can... Because, you know what, it's like you get a team like West Brom or West Ham who they're not really playing for much, and without really realising it, they could have three wins on the bounce and suddenly they're down in there as well. It's going to be really interesting. I think it's going to go right to the end as well. I don't think we'll get out of it easily.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about the defence, and particularly, the lad you got from us in Sacco. It was his first start, and by all accounts, he was man of match performance, replacing Scott Dann, no less, as well, who's been a pillar of the side for years. I just wonder, do you think that he's the kind of guy who Sam's going to look to try and bring in permanently? Because one of the things I think about Allardyce is that his man management is severely underrated. When you look at the disparate places that he drew players from Bolton and for Blackburn as well. So he's the kind of guy who, I mean, let's face it, Sacco, he can be a bit of an head case. I imagine him doing the manager's head in on a daily basis. But Sam looks like the kind of guy who can get the best out of him despite all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I think all Liverpool fans were saying when he came, or the fans I asked, was that on the pitch he can be a bit all over the place, but it was all the off-pitch stuff that caused the problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got a lot of head cases down at Palace. There's also a lot of French guys down there, mm-hmm. a lot of French speakers in the squad. But in that game on Saturday, I mean, he was just brilliant. The way he commands it, it's a completely different presence. I think I said it on here before, the captaincy's not really helped Scott Dann. I think it's added a bit of... I know it's a weird thing to say, but I think it's added a lot of pressure on him. And I don't think he's that type of player. But the reason he wasn't playing because he was injured, he didn't replace him. Oh, okay. But there was a hilarious moment. The ball was in the box and Sacco's got the ball and he just lightly passes to Tompkins. He absolutely just bricks it and just hoofs it away. Yeah, and you can see Sacco looking and going... You should be better than that. What are you doing? He's such a good player. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that. I mean, we've not seen him play for a long time. I don't know. It's his debut, you know. Yeah. Just see three games in when he's against Arsenal.
Do you think?
In terms of him staying, though, as well, I mean, I think Palace will want him. I don't know if he'd want to stay at Palace.
Okay, I just want to talk a little bit about the other lad you got from us, Benteke, who started like a house on fire, but the goals have dried up for him a little bit of late. Are you still seeing enough in his action on the pitch to justify him still being there, or are you maybe thinking about trying some other options?
Well, we don't really have any other options for a start. We've got Connor Wickham, who actually started to come through. He got a big injury, and Fraser Campbell, when he plays, he's brilliant. He runs for everything, but he never scores.
Yeah.
So, but with Benteke, we started well because we started the season well. We were doing all right at the start of the season, and we were putting the ball on his head and to his feet. I think he struggled because he felt isolated up there. I think we just put the ball on his head, that's it. We never put the ball to his feet. We never give him anything to run onto. The other side of that, he's not very good defensively. And that can be a bit of an issue. We've lost a few goals because he's not marked people at corners. But I think he just needs a bit of rocket up him.
I think he's a funny player in that. I think people presume, given his stature, that he's your, you know, that he's your big bruiser of a front man, and he's actually much more sophisticated than that. And I think it takes people a little bit of time to work that out, both supporters watching him and also people who are picking him on how players are playing into him. I think they think that, you know, you just go, you know, you want to just consistently go at his head, whereas he doesn't want that really. He wants to be brought into the game, and I'd still expect Allardyce to get a fair bit out of him. And also the other thing about him as well is all the way through his career, Robbie, he's been quite streaky. I remember he almost single-handedly kept Villa up two seasons ago before we bought him, and he scored something mad like 12 in the last 12 or something. And it wouldn't surprise if in this instance, if there's more confidence around Palace, there's a good ball into him next weekend, he gets one, and then before you know where you are, he's got another that game, and then he's a threat the next week, you know. And I think that's what you're waiting for, is for him to come alive like that.
Yeah, totally. First half, we were putting the ball a lot of time onto his head. He had a couple of chances where he probably should have scored. In the second half, we played to him, and he did have the back to the goal, and he did turn, he get a few shots in. Like you say, he's streaky. He's clearly a confidence player as well. Also, I think he had a penalty miss against Watford, mm-hmm. and I think that really knocked him back, because it was a bad miss.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that penalty that he does where it looks great when it goes in, but if it doesn't go in, you look like a dope.
No, and Allardyce came out, and I think they had quite a big falling out about that in training. The rumours were going around. Allardyce really kicked off at him.
No, it was 1-0 at the time, and you know, you score that, it goes 2-0, and then it's all very, very different, and maybe the whole season might have been different from that point, because I think they end up getting a result.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a draw in the end.
It was a draw.
He's a great player for us. He's still great on training pitch. He's still a great presence. When he's on the pitch, you really do feel his presence as well. You know he's there. And at the end of the game, Townsend run through, and he should have crossed the ball to Benteke. And Benteke, you know, totally loses it at Townsend for not crossing it. And he's right. And he's saying that's the sort of thing you need now and again. Palace, we make wrong decisions. That's what we keep doing. You know, cutting inside and really should go down the wing. Midfield players just bombing on forward, and you're like, we haven't got the ball. You know, you can see, and Allardyce is taking away a lot of these stupid decisions. He's kind of, you can see how statistically he wants the ball put in certain areas and places where there's a higher chance of something better happening. And you can see that's how he's explaining it to the players as well. Get the ball, turn and run.
Sorry, Rob. One of the good things about it as well is that after this game at West Brom, you've got another 2-week gap, because obviously Spurs are going to be playing in the Cup. So that will really give him a chance to hammer out any of those little errors of, like you say, decision making, and really get it so everyone knows exactly where they need to be within that system.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, everyone's saying he's quite a brutal manager, in terms of he comes at the players with a lot of stats, and he comes at you and he tells you exactly what you're doing wrong. And training is hard. It was a lot harder than under Pardew. I mean, you could tell half the team wasn't fit. But the reason we were losing goals at the end of games is because players weren't fit. They were just running out of gas before they get to the end. And that's not happening now. You can see the players. His training methods are very strong. I think in himself as well, you know, what happened with the England job, he definitely feels like he's got something to prove. And I think going down would be just... I mean, you can see he's worried about it, but this win, I think it really might push us up there. I think the attitude of the club might change. We still might lose games, but we can now see that there's a chance. If we'd have lost that game, we'd have gone down.
Okay, great to be to Robbie and to Dan and to Rebecca, Mo and John as well. It's been a lovely edition of The Coach Home. I hope you've enjoyed it. More of this sort of thing soon.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.